Chapter 3. Aboard Gulfstream 3 and 379LT, 33,000 feet above the Atlantic Ocean, approximately 100 nautical miles east of Cancun, Mexico, 1630 hours, 8 September 2005. Lieutenant Colonel C.G. Castillo couldn't move his legs. He was up to his knees in some kind of muck. Where the hell am I? What's going on? He opened his eyes and found himself sitting in the rear-facing seat against the right bulkhead separating the cockpit from the passenger compartment, and saw the reason he had the nightmare in which he couldn't move his legs. Max was having a little snooze, too, and had chosen to take it in the space between the rear-facing seat and the forward-facing seat, and to rest his weary head on Castillo's feet.
You big bastard, how did you get in there?
Max raised his head just enough to look at Castillo, and for Castillo to free his feet, and then laid it down again. Castillo swung his feet into the aisle, unfastened his seatbelt, stood up, and walked down the aisle to meet the call of nature. He saw that he and Max were not the only ones having a little snooze. Davidson was sitting in the rear-facing seat across the aisle, snoring softly. Delchamp and Leverett were stretched out on the couches, sound asleep. Jung and Niedermeyer were awake, talking softly, in two of the aisle-facing seats, and Bradley was in one of the forward-facing seats in the rear of the fuselage, looking as if sleep was just around the corner. When he came out of the toilet, he thought, as he often did, of the fat lady on a transatlantic flight whose rear end had made a perfect seal around the toilet seat, something she found out when she flushed the device and the vacuum evacuation system kept her glued to it for several hours. He laughed, then helped himself to a cup of coffee and carried it up the aisle to the cockpit.
"How's it going?" Castillo said to the pilots.
"Our leader is awake," Taurine said. "Look busy, Captain."
Captain Richard M. Sparkman, U.S. Air Force, glanced over his shoulder and smiled at Castillo, then pointed to a GPS screen in the instrument panel.
"There we are," he said, "about 100 miles off Cancun. We should make Quito in 4:15, give or take."
"There's one of those mounted on the bulkhead in the cabin," Castillo said.
"Our benefactor, knowing that your revered leader likes to keep an eye on the pilots."
Taurine gave him the finger. Castillo smiled, then did the mental math.
"That'll put us in Quito just before 11. Figure an hour for the fuel, a piss stop, and a sandwich, giving us wheels up out of there at midnight. And then another 5:30 or 6 to Buenos Aires, putting us in there about 5:30 or 6 in the morning, which will be 3:30 or 4 local time."
Then he had another thought.
"Which means there will be almost nothing doing at Jorge Newbery when we land. People will be curious."
"Jake, how about going into Ezeiza?
Jorge Newbery will be deserted at 3:30 in the morning. Ezeiza starts getting the FedEx and UPS planes and some of the European arrivals very early. Maybe we can sort of not be noticed."
"You're right, but they expect us at Jorge Newbery."
"You are forgetting our new camo equipment?"
"I stand corrected," Taurine said, "and I will get on the horn just as soon as I'm sure they're all asleep. I don't see why Dick and I should be the only ones in this group awake all night."
"Fly carefully and smoothly, children," Castillo said. "Your leader is going to be sleeping."
Taurine gave him the finger again. Castillo went back to his seat, this time carefully lowering his feet onto Max's chest. Max opened his eyes for a moment, then closed them again. Castillo sat for a moment and said,
"Oh, shit."
He then gently tapped on Max with his feet. Max raised his head.
"Sorry, pal," Castillo said. "You have to get up."
Max didn't budge, although he continued to look at Castillo.
"Get up, damn it!"
Max didn't move. Castillo swung his legs into the aisle, got up, and took a few steps down the cabin aisle.
"Come on, boy,"
No response. Castillo clapped his hands together. Once. Twice. A third time. Max, not without effort, got to his feet and backed into the aisle.
Good boy.
Castillo pushed Max backward up the aisle until he had access to the drawer under his seat. He bent over and pulled it open. Max took two steps and licked Castillo's face.
Son of a bitch,
Castillo said, and, pushing at Max to back up, realized the dog probably thought he was playing. Castillo reached into the drawer and pulled his laptop from it. Max kissed him again.
Ah, God damn it!
I think he likes you, Colonel,
Sergeant Niedermeyer said. Castillo looked up at Niedermeyer.
This is one of those times when I wish I was not a field-grade officer, Castillo said.
Sir? If we were both sergeants, I could tell you to take a flying fuck at a rolling donut, Castillo said.
With all due respect, Colonel, sir, it is not the sergeant's fault that the animal seems to like you, sir.
Does the sergeant have something on what is loosely known as his mind?
Yes, sir. The sergeant thought the colonel might be interested in some photographs the sergeant took in Louisiana, or more precisely, Colonel, sir, as we were flying over Mississippi and Louisiana, sir.
He handed Castillo a large manila envelope. Castillo took it from him and removed the photographs. There were 20 or more 8-by-10-inch crisp color prints. Just about all of them were photographs of the hurricane damage they had seen from the air.
Nice, Jamie, Castillo said. What's the chances of getting a set of these?
I made those for you, Niedermeyer said.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate that.
He was now nearly at the end of the stack of photographs. The one he had on top of the stack now was of him and the Richardson boy. They had both turned in their seats to look into the rear of the airplane.
Niedermeyer must have done something, called something to get us to turn and look at him.
Castillo was turned in his seat to his right, and the Richardson boy to his left, the result being their heads were close together.
Nice kid, Niedermeyer said. If I didn't know better, I'd think he was yours.
What?
He's got your eyes, Colonel, Niedermeyer said. I have so far been spared the joys of matrimony and, so far as I know, of parenthood.
The eyes, Colonel, they're as blue as yours, that's what I mean.
No, he doesn't look like me. I'm blonde and fair-skinned. This kid is olive-skinned. He could almost be Latin.
He looks like Fernando looked the first time I saw him. We were about as old then as this kid.
Holy Christ. Calm down. How could Richardson's kid possibly be mine?
Castillo suddenly felt a chill down his spine. He had goosebumps.
Dumb fucking question. Well, he's a nice kid. I wish he was mine.
But he's not, obviously,
Castillo said, and put the photographs back in the envelope.
Thanks, Jamie.
Happy to do it, Colonel, Jamie Niedermeyer said, and walked back to his seat.
Castillo picked up his laptop from the seat, sat down, tucked the envelope of photographs under the laptop, and then opened the computer. He clicked on a file titled Checklist. A screen full of gibberish appeared.
Why did I bother to encrypt this? No one could make sense out of it if it was on a billboard.
He held down the control key, typed DEC, and the file decrypted. The gibberish was replaced by a screen more or less in English. Three groupings of letters or words, each followed by two or more question marks. 1. RRAC. AV. When. Where. ETAU. Or. 2. OO. C-5s, C-141s, how many, where, land? 3. Pevsner, where? Drug connection, where his bell?